Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. Martin Black with me. Good morning, Martin.
Morning, Kevin. How are you?
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. And you're the co-founder of the Margaret River Chocolate Factory, founded in 1999 with your business partner, Patrick Coward. Over 1 million visitors per year on average here in WA. Fantastic business. It's going to be great having a chat about it. Martin, tell us about the origination story, how you got started with the business, and, you know, take us back to the very beginning.
Sure. Patrick and I have been friends a lot longer than we've been business partners. We grew up in the same street in Kewdale from the age of 6. So we've been sort of friends for more than 50 years now. And like a lot of West Australians, we were regular visitors to the sort of Margaret River region in our sort of 20s and fell in love with the place, really. We had dreams of buying a holiday shack down there, but neither of us had a lot of money. So we banded together with a couple of mates, and between the four of us, we decided that we'd buy a little holiday house. We ended up with 100 acres of land in Willyabrup instead and built a little shack on it. And the first sort of time the four owners really got together was on Easter weekend in 1998. The house had been finished for just a few weeks. And we had a great weekend down there, and we were thinking about, you know, what else we can do with this property. You know, should we plant some vines or what should we do? The idea of chocolate came up. You know, Margaret River was getting a great reputation for its wine. There were some nice restaurants starting to open. But, you know, there was a gap in the marketplace. And I think, you know, for any successful business, one of the fundamentals is finding a gap in the market and being able to fill that gap successfully
and fill it with chocolate.
and fill it with chocolate. Yeah, I'm a non-drinker, so I used to spend a lot of my time in the region driving my friends around to wineries, and they'd all be getting a little bit drunk, and I'd be sort of sitting out on the lawn outside on the fifth winery getting a bit bored along with all the other kids. And I thought, I had this vision in my head of, imagine these kids doing the deal with mum and dad. Yep, okay, we're prepared to sit outside these wineries, but the payoff is we get to go to the chocolate factory. And that sort of image of the kids, as well as the adults, having that motivation to go somewhere that was for them.
That was where the idea came from then, the chocolate idea, really? Is that where you've...
Pretty much, yeah. It's that sort of combination of what's missing, what can we do that has got broad-based appeal, but it's going to add something to the tourist offering in the region.
Because, I mean, first of all, it's a beautiful part of the world, Margaret River, obviously, the southwest, and it does go... I mean, I've been here just over 15 years, and it was a beautiful place when I first visited. I thought it was fantastic. And when you go there from, I guess, as a tourist coming from another country, in my own experience, it does kind of lend itself to have gourmet foods and wine, and it just fits, doesn't it, for that region. So, and at that point, there wasn't anybody doing what you were doing then. There was no sort of chocolatier or chocolate factory. So that worked. It works alongside wine, doesn't it? You know, chocolate, wine, and
absolutely. You know, they're indulgences.
Yes,
that's, you know, they're the sort of thing that people seek comfort in when times are tough, and they celebrate with when times are good. So, you know, they often say that beer is, you know, one of those commodities that survives regardless of the broader prevailing economic conditions.
Yes.
And I think, you know,
chocolate.
COVID's chocolate probably proved us a little bit wrong. but yeah, chocolate, you know, is in that same sort of category.
Yeah, and so it's great to hear identify the gap in the market, first of all, as you mentioned, which is important for any business owner, and then where does it go from there? So you identify, you've got the land, you identify the gap in the market, what you actually want to provide as your offering, as your product, and where does the conversation go from there? How do you sit around the table and have a chat about it? What do you start tasting chocolate? What do you do?
The first thing we did was you know, say, okay, who's in?
Yes.
Patrick and I were both keen on the idea. The other two friends thought it was a dumb idea, along with a lot of other people who thought, why would you put a chocolate factory in the middle of nowhere, which where we are, you know, was quite sort of remote. It's only 20 minutes from each of the major towns down there, but it was relatively remote sort of farming property.
And that's important. Just, sorry, Martin, just on that, because there is always naysayers, isn't there? You know, there is always people that, you know, I guess, you know, if you're in, you're in, but there is always naysayers as far as people that might say, that's not a good idea. Or So it's important to, for anyone that's listening that has an idea, that to understand that not everybody's going to be on board with your idea. They might, you know, you've got to stick to your guns, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're passionate about something and you believe in it, you've got to see it through, and, you know, it might not always work out. I mean, I've done things that haven't worked out over the years, yes. But, you know, this one did. But, you know, we were fortunate. We had that conversation. Patrick and I decided we were going to push ahead with the idea. So from, you know, Easter 98 to opening in May 99, we basically pulled it together in a year. Yeah, and that was a very steep learning curve. We had to learn about chocolate. We had to learn how to make it. We had to go into the whole realm of packaging. We had to go through the whole planning process of actually being able to do this on the rural property that we owned. So there was a lot to do. Having a partner in business has significant upside. It has some downside, but you know, being able to spread the workload and both of us throwing ourselves into it for that 12 months really helped us accelerate that process.
And what did the first 12 months look like as far as the nitty-gritty of it? You know, I suppose, so you determine, you know, the supplier necessarily or the equipment, the layout, the planning. But what did it look like for you and Patrick? Was it sort of rolling the sleeves up and getting in amongst it? Or what were your roles in the beginning?
Sure. We were both still running other businesses at the time because, you know, we couldn't afford to just stop and throw everything into this. So it was very much a part-time, you know, working extra hours, weekends, etc. And, yeah, very much hands-on. We literally, between the two of us, you know, researched everything we could about chocolate. We managed to find an ex-European chocolatier who just happened to be living in Perth and was running a little business making pâtés and sausages. So we managed to get him on board as a consultant to help us through those early days. Yeah. We had to source supply chains for our raw chocolates and those sort of things. You know, the planning element, as I mentioned, was pretty complicated, working with architects to design what was ostensibly a very sort of, you know, tarted up shed.
Yes.
Designing packaging, putting together a promotional plan and a business plan, all those sorts of things. A little bit of it we'd known from running our own businesses, but this was remote. You know, it was 3.5 hours away from where we both were. Yeah. So anything we were doing on site, we had to do day trips down to Margaret River and that sort of thing. So a lot of things had to come together, and most of them did.
And it'd be a lot harder doing that back in, you know, 1998, 1999 than it would be now, because you don't have all the technology that you do nowadays. You know, your Zoom and all everything's done remotely nowadays, whereas you'd have to, I guess, jump in the car and drive down there to get answers. And
absolutely. And there was no Forest Highway either, so it was the old clunky road through Mandurah, you know, and thermal fax machines and those sort of things. Yeah. So, yeah, it was an additional layer of challenge, but
awesome.
You know, we got through it, and I guess the biggest lesson we learnt was that we'd actually underprepared, because I don't think we'd fully appreciated just how much this idea of a chocolate factory had caught the imagination of both the locals and the Perth community, because, you know, we'd done our research for our business plan and we'd gone around to all the popular destinations at the time down there, wineries like Vass Felix, which is just down the road from us, and we'd gauged their visitor numbers and we'd done our calculations on how many people we might get. And I think our original business plan, we expected to get maybe 100 people a day during the week and up to 200 people a day on the weekends. And then the day we opened, we had 2,500 people through the door. So, you know, we literally were stripped bare in that first day, and we spent all of that first night with our families and friends who'd come down for the opening, making and packaging more chocolate, because we just didn't have enough to put back on the shelves the second day.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic hearing about it in the beginning, and the marketing of it. So I'm just thinking aloud there with the chocolate factory idea. You know, when I hear chocolate factory, having children, or myself included, I always think of the Willy Wonka thing, you know.
Absolutely.
And I'm assuming that was part of the thought process with the branding and the marketing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the beauty of chocolate is that it really does appeal to all ages. You know, anyone from, you know, 5 to 85, mm-hmm. you know, has a sweet tooth at some level. So we really wanted to tap into that. So there was the appeal at that sort of Willy Wonka level that most kids and most adults have deep down.
I think all of us like that, the idea of the chocolate factory.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fun. It's one of those fun things, isn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing that was really important for us was to make our product at a premium level in both the quality of what we were making, but also in terms of the packaging itself. Because at the end of the day, you can go to Coles and you can buy a bar of Cadbury chocolate for a lot less than you can buy our chocolate. But our chocolate tastes better and it looks better. Mm-hmm. And if you turned up to a dinner party with a bottle of wine and a bar of Cadbury's chocolate, or you turned up to a dinner party with a bottle of wine and some of our chocolate, you'd hope that you'd get a better response from the hosts that, you know, you've actually gone out of your way to get something special for them. So that was a very important part of our marketing and continues to be a very important part of everything we do, is making sure that it's the best it can be so that it has that premium.
Yes, you've got a differentiating factor about it rather than just being a normal run-of-the-mill product. That was your, I guess, your USP at that point. You're, you know, locally made and at a higher sort of premium, finest sort of level.
Yeah, exactly. And handmade and hand-packaged, you know, because, you know, we don't have the million-dollar processing and production plants that, you know, your Cadbury's have.
Yes.
You know, everything we do, there's a guy there mixing bowls or somebody, you know, filling boxes with chocolate. So you do have to be conscious of the fact that your labour content does make it a more expensive product to produce, and therefore you have to be able to charge a premium for the product itself.
Yeah, Martin, what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk a little bit more about the sort of marketing in the beginning as well. As far as, you know, when you said that you had close to over 2,000 people in the beginning for the first day, which is incredible, you know, and that's in 1999. So how are you raising awareness back in 1999 about the doors opening, essentially the launch? How are you doing it back then?
Yeah, I mean the first thing we did, and very simple, you know, 101, big sign on the property.
Yeah,
because a lot of people are driving past it, going to various wineries in the area.
Yeah,
so a big sign. Chocolate factory coming soon.
Yes, which in itself would be exciting. Yeah,
yeah. People see and go, "Oh my god, a chocolate factory!" And all those images that we were just talking about start to circulate already. So there's this expectation building.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'd try and get some local coverage in the papers down there about the construction underway and those sorts of things. So the local community down there was already very aware and very on board with this exciting new development. Then we had to try and get into the Perth broader community, because, you know, a lot of your customer base is people from Perth who are down there for the weekends or the school holidays or whatever. So we had to get it into that broader marketplace. And so we started filtering out little bits of information, you know, when the building was nearly complete or about, you know, our product tastings that we were doing and developing these recipes.
And is this press releases and newspaper?
This is primarily press releases in the newspapers and magazines. And then we were very, very fortunate. About a month after we'd opened, the West Australian's Colour magazine, which used to be a lift out in the paper, did a cover story on us on the fact that, you know, these two 10-pound poms from Kewdale had come up with this crazy idea of putting a chocolate factory in the middle of nowhere, and boom.
Yeah,
that was it. You know, that really started that broad-based awareness. And, you know, 22 years on, you know, we turned 22 in May. You basically have got a business that has got generational awareness. You know, we've got parents bringing their kids in now because they went there when they were kids. And so,
do you think that's because of the excitement of it? Do you think that's because, now, obviously, because you're providing a premium product, and all the things that you do properly, service and the things that businesses should do, but not all businesses have a generational effect. You know, they don't, not everybody can do that. So, do you think that's because, well, for one, everybody likes chocolate, I suppose, but it's an experience for all ages, and it's something that, you know, but what do you think the reason for it is, I suppose?
One of the absolute keys, and this was a decision we made very early on, was the free tastings.
Yes.
Now, COVID has changed the look of the free tastings, but from day one up until COVID, we had big stainless steel bowls, three of them, on the counter when you walked in the door, piled high with milk, white and dark chocolate.
Yep.
And you could have as much as you wanted. You could go up there five times if you wanted.
Yeah.
And that was always going to be and still is our single biggest marketing tool.
Yeah, well.
Because on top of the whole imagery of Willy Wonka and chocolate and that broad-based appeal, here's this generosity of I can go in there and eat as much chocolate as I want. And you tell that to a kid and that's how it becomes multi-generational, because still people come along and they know that they can walk in the door and they can see all this free chocolate and there's, you know, a massive range of things, but they can still get those free chocolate tastings every single time they walk in the door. And that has a huge appeal and it spreads your reputation.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I know from my own experience, if I drive through the Swan Valley or the Margaret River region, for instance, my kids see Chocolate Factory, they automatically know about the free samples. They automatically know about, let's go and get some chocolate. So I think it's a good answer. And, you know, it's a fantastic marketing tool, as you say, because it definitely works. And I know from my own experience, it does as well. You have more than one premises. So you've got the premises in the Swan Valley and in the city in Perth. So how it went from having that Margaret River first premises and the sort of time frame and how you what decisions you made in order to grow the business, I suppose.
The first 2 years of being in the business was pretty intense. Both Patrick and I were still running our sort of day jobs, if you like, during those initial months. And very quickly, you know, the 2,000 people a day didn't continue, but we were still a lot busier than we ever expected to be. And we saw that this had the makings of a very solid long-term business. We also saw that it had the potential to be replicated in other wine tourism locations. And at that stage, you know, the Swan Valley was certainly less mature as a market than Margaret River as a tourism destination. But there were some big, solid, good performers out there. You know, you had your Sandalfords, and you had some of the smaller wineries, and you had the Lamonts and people who were, you know, were getting runs on the board out in the Swan Valley. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, you had this little oasis of green and vines and river frontage 25 minutes from the centre of the city.
Yeah.
And you could see that ultimately, as has transpired, that suburbia was almost going to envelope it.
Yeah.
And so here you'd have people living in a suburban location but with this amazing amenity very close to them. So we decided that we needed to be in the Swan Valley. And this was within the first 6 months of opening Margaret River. Things were still going crazy. You know, we were literally hanging on by our fingernails to this beast that we'd created. But we, you know...
Exciting.
Yeah. And so we then ended up one weekend door knocking properties along West Swan Road, because we recognised that West Swan Road was where we needed to be. Door-knocking people, putting leaflets in letterboxes saying, are you interested in selling your property? A mate of ours who was a real estate agent then started following up on people,
and we
found the property, the little five-acre site where we are now on West Swan Road. So we started construction of our second facility within 6 months of opening Margaret River. It was pretty crazy. We had no money. Mm-hmm. We literally...
Did you pay them in chocolate?
Yeah. I'm hoping that our bankers aren't listening. We love Bankwest. They've been fantastic to us, but we did have to tell them a few porky pies in the early days to get the funding for the second factory. But, you know, we started it and we opened the second factory in December 2000. So it was 18 months from opening the first one to opening the second one. And we've grown with the Swan Valley. And it's been fantastic to see the Swan Valley evolve over that 21 years now into the amazing destination it is, because there are very few places in the world where, you know, you can be living in a suburban area and you can walk down your road and have beautiful vineyards, beautiful restaurants, amazing places like, you know, chocolate factories and ice cream factories and so many micro breweries now. And it's all just nestled into this beautiful little location. And we've been very privileged to be there. And, you know, it's become a firm favourite with, you know, a lot of Perth people, but also a lot of the interstate and international tourists who used to come into Western Australia.
We'll come back eventually.
And, you know, sometimes they don't quite have time to go to Margaret River, mm-hmm. but the Swan Valley gives them a little taste of that. And Margaret River Chocolate Company in the Swan Valley gives them a little taste of what we can offer as well. So that came along very quickly. Then we sort of rested for a little while. After that was open and we got all the systems in place and got it operating, we basically collapsed in a heap for
a
little
while. How long did it take to get the second premises up and running though? Because, you know, you said 6 months later you started the second one.
Yeah.
How long did it take to sort of get to the end of that process with the second premises set up, systems?
Yeah, it was another year of building out in the Swan Valley and getting all the systems, and, you know, a lot of it's the time consumed in going through the, you know, statutory requirements with local government and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was literally an 18-month process from start to finish, looking for the property, buying the property and building, and then, you know, all the associated things with staffing and packaging and equipment and all those sorts of things. So it was fairly fast-tracked. And then we had a little break after that before we decided to do our Providore businesses, which are a sister company, yes, in Margaret River and the Swan Valley. And then ultimately about 7 years ago, we moved into the city when we realised that some people were time poor. They loved our product, particularly visitors from interstate, et cetera. Yeah. They couldn't quite get to the valley or to Margaret River. And so we opened our store on Murray Street in the city, which once again has been great, because it services our local fans who want our product but aren't always, you know, going as far as the valley or Margaret River, mm-hmm, but also that whole business tourism market and international tourists as well.
So it's a real accelerated growth from the beginning then, in that 6 months to have the second premises. And I guess there may be a little bit you obviously, again, identifying the opportunity, identifying that there is an equivalent version of Margaret River on a smaller scale sitting in the middle of CBD Perth, you know, that you can replicate exactly what you've done before. And, you know, do you think there's timing? Do you think there's an element of timing with that as well, because the business has grown with the Swan Valley itself? Do you think that's, you know, was that what you identified, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when something works well, it will be copied. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had other chocolate factories come along in Margaret River. We've had them come along in the Swan Valley, et cetera. So, you know, being first is a big plus.
Yes.
And if you do it properly, it gives you a very strong edge over the rest of the market. Early on, we looked at going interstate with the business. You know, Patrick and I flew to the Yarra Valley and the Barossa Valley and the Hunter Valley. And we looked at lots of locations. And we were extremely confident that it would work in those other locations. At the end of the day, we didn't pursue it. I had a young family at the time, and I guess although we're very passionate about our businesses, we weren't looking to build an empire and the sake of growth for growth's sake and all the downside associated with that in terms of your own personal time and the impact on your family was probably more than we were willing to compromise.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've had subsequent managers of ours who've gone over and opened facilities in those states and have done very well with it. Mm-hmm. So, and that gives us a bit of pride as well. You know, one of our managers has a couple of factories in Victoria now and has done very well. And that's good to see. You know, we've had friends of ours have opened a chocolate factory in Malta, built on our template.
I hope they've got good fridges.
Yeah, and there's also one in Scotland they were visitors from Scotland who came to Margaret River, saw what we were doing, went home and did it. And then they sent us this really beautiful letter some photographs saying, we just want to let you know that we basically, you know, took your idea and here we've replicated it and, you know, it's changed our lives. Thank you, you know, for the inspiration. So
we are a courteous bunch, Martin, the Scots. We'll take your idea, but we'll tell you we've done it anyway.
Yeah, exactly, which is fantastic, you know. We've had a lot of our, you know, one of the young kids who worked for us in Margaret River from the age of 14, whose family owned a vineyard down the road, you know, he went off after he'd been off to university and things and started a nougat company. So it's really good to see those sort of things happening.
It's great, and I think what I heard and what you were saying as well is important. Is it's all fine and well with opportunities, identifying opportunities, and opportunities come along and then there's the next one and another one and another one. But in your situation, and I think you said in Patrick's as well, it's not every opportunity is the right timing necessarily. You've got to be considered in your approach to it. Certainly in your respect, it was about the family aspect. And, you know, because sometimes we can get caught up in it, can't we? We can get in. So there has to be a sort of a more educated approach to it to fit the balance of your life and also strategically if it's viable as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and also if you're growing a business, you can't do it all yourself. No. You've got to find good people. And at the end of the day, our business stands or falls on the quality of the people that we employ. Because if we haven't got, you know, we're running a very diverse sort of group of businesses in very geographically diverse locations as well. And if you haven't got solid people on the ground who are running those businesses almost as if they're their own and have got the same, you know, passion and commitment to quality and service, etc., then you're going to come unstuck because you can't do it all yourself. So you have to very quickly learn not to try and micromanage people, to give them the systems and the framework and the inspiration, but then give them a degree of, you know, ownership and that they're running that site, and you know that they won't always do things exactly the way that you would do them, but they're going to do a good job, and you have to. There's a bit of letting go as well.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic advice, Martin. You know, coming up for Easter, obviously, it's your busiest time of year.
We hope so.
We had a chat about off air. Let's just quickly, we'll just touch on, you know, we spoke off air about Easter last year versus Easter this year.
Yeah.
You know, and the comparisons in terms of the COVID situation for you as a business. Can you just elaborate on that quickly before we go?
Sure. I mean, Easter's the biggest weekend of the year in the chocolate business. You know, we make Easter products for several months before Easter to have enough in stock. We did that in 2020, as you know, we have done every year for 20 years, and then COVID hit, and the Southwest got separated from Perth with internal borders, and all of our businesses ground to a halt, with you know $250,000 worth of Easter product ready to go out the door, but no customers. So, massive challenge. This 12 months has been very challenging. Even going into this Easter, I've been very gun shy about how much we've been producing because you know, that fear that we make all this Easter product and then we go into a 5-day lockdown or a 3-day lockdown like Brisbane just has, it could spell disaster.
Changes
again.
Things so overnight, yeah.
Yeah, so we've been a little bit circumspect, but you know, we've still got lots and lots of Easter product in all three outlets. So I would encourage your listeners to shop local. You know, we created the Chocka the Quokka as the West Australian Easter, you know, idol a few years back to try and move away from bunnies and those sorts of things. So we've got lots and lots of chocolate quokkas and other great products. So I would really love to get through this Easter. And it probably won't be a normal Easter because of, you know, ongoing COVID restrictions. But, you know, I certainly hope it's better than last Easter.
Thanks very much, Martin. It's been fantastic having you. I think it's great for us to hear about certainly iconic businesses like yours in terms of how you started, your challenges, and the story. I think we can all learn something from it as business owners. So I'm very grateful for your time and I'm very grateful for your insight. Thank you.
Thanks, Kieran. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website, www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time.